Hello, James McGrath.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
I'm really well. Good. I feel like I need to introduce myself to you.
It's been a while. Let me just say, this is going to be a rough one. I am knackered. Whoever came up with this idea of doing it early morning my time, late night your time, you look pristine. It looks like every single hair has been perfectly stood on end. And it's like I'm looking at Egon from Ghostbusters.
Well, it's been a while, so I thought, how can I try and make James happy? And first of all, let's just clear this up. This idea of the nighttime for me, morning for you, is your idea, my friend. Yours.
Yeah. All right.
As the amazing Australian singer-songwriter Johnny Diesel would say, it's a crying shame when you got yourself to blame.
Ooh.
Look him up. Johnny Diesel, one of the most underrated guitar players and singers getting around.
Is that like a way of cooling up Jason Donovan? Is that what the cool kids call Jason Donovan? Johnny Diesel.
He was in a band in the 80s called Johnny Diesel and the Injectors.
Oh, God.
Right? Don't tell me we haven't got some classy music down here in Australia.
Oh, my God. You guys, yeah. I think it's a product of just being so remote and on your own. You've got some really weird things going on down under, my friend. But before we start trashing the whole of your country, and before we start getting into Coben Canyon, let me just say, my subscription to Total 911 magazine has reappeared after about 6 months of not receiving any issues. It has reappeared.
That's good.
You know, I usually turn to page 66 or page 70, wherever the Living a Legend or Living the Legend section is. Mm-hmm. For the past 3 months in a row, your ugly mug has appeared further up in that section than my mug. And I'm like, what is going on? Andy Gaunt's writing for Total 911 magazine. First of all, I didn't know that. I must have missed that in the news. And second of all, you are getting placed higher than I am. What is going on?
A couple of things. Better quality writing, better photography, better thought out articles. It's not rocket science, my friend. It's pretty cool. I was pretty rapt. I haven't got the first edition that I wrote a piece for, though. So I'm still on the lookout for it because I really want that one. But yeah, it's quite the thrill, huh? When you get the magazine and there's a little piece in the back with your name on it and a photo you took. It's great. And in fact, a bunch of my mates were in one of the issues. I included some photos of them, and they're all like, "I can't believe I'm in Total 911." I'm like, "Yeah, that's 100% cool."
Mate, I actually have that first edition that you were in.
226.
I've wiped my ass with it, but I will send it to you if you want it.
Why are you gonna make it like that?
Welcome to Coben Canyon, friends.
Fantastic. So James, it's been a while. I want to start by saying a huge congrats to my friend Gerard, who is, as we speak, driving down the east coast of Australia in his newly acquired 2013 Carrera S in aqua blue. It is, you should see the color of this car. It is unbelievably great. It is so good.
What year did you say?
2013. So 991.
Oh, in aqua blue. I bet aqua you that blue. Looks absolutely gorgeous.
It's, he flew to Brisbane and now he's driving back home to Victoria. You know those road trips. They are the best. When you fly somewhere to collect a Porsche and then drive it home, it does not get any better.
Absolutely. I'm still buzzing off picking up that 169,000 mile Cayenne a month ago from Indianapolis. I mean, that's just how sad it is. So picking up an aqua blue 991, oh my goodness, yeah.
I was about to say, and there it is, ladies and gentlemen. You were hoping we'd start talking about Cayennes. Well, we're straight into it.
Dude, I want to talk about that. No, I don't really want to talk about that Cayenne, but I love it. I absolutely love it. That's In fact, so much. So cool. I've been like stepping out of the house with the keys to the 996 thinking, is it going to rain today? You know what? I'll just take the Cayenne. It's easy. On, really? Go the bum cooler. You know, open up the moonroof. Down go the windows. Yeah, I'm loving it. It's absolutely awesome. But funnily, you should speak about Aqua Blue 991s. I was actually looking at a 991.2 in, I don't know if it was Aqua Blue or not, but it must have been pretty similar. There's one going currently for about 75,000 with about 75,000 miles on it. Somewhere in the US, I found it on Auto Trader last night. And of course, you know, me being me, 2 o'clock in the morning, what am I doing? Emailing the dealer, hey, is it available? what if I put this much down? What kind of deal could you give me? And I wake up this morning and I'm like, okay, well, first off, I've got a podcast. Second, I'm not going to have time for coffee. And third, what on earth was I doing emailing a dealer at 2 in the morning about a car I can't afford?
Isn't it amazing what insomnia will make you do? You can buy anything in the middle of the night, I reckon.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Bonkers. Yeah. But mate, I've missed you. It's been a while. It has. And we all, it's becoming a cliche. Like, you know, we start these podcasts with, I can't believe how long it's been since the last time, but it has been a while. What's going on? How's Little Green? How's the track car?
So much. We are gonna get into all of that. We've got some Porsche rumors to talk about. I want to talk about our cars, where they're at. I just got back from Alpine Range Rally 8. We're going to talk about that. We've got a new segment, Porsche Global Community Vibes, which we're going to get into tonight as well. I'm really looking forward to this. And I want to start with Luft 9. Did you go?
First off, can we just talk about the name of the new segments? I'm all for adding new content, but that sounds like an 80s corporate training video. What is it called again?
Listen, we can take this offline. We can brainstorm this stuff when we're not recording. We haven't spoken in like 6 months. I go, yo, dude, got a cool idea for a new segment. It's just this. You've not offered me any feedback, and now you're going to throw me under the bus on air? What kind of partnership is this?
Oh, yeah. It's Andy.
Everyone's going, these guys. That's right. That's right. I've missed them so much.
All right, let's talk about Luft 9. Dude, did you go? I missed it. I really wanted to go. I'm even doing work in San Francisco at the moment. I've got a client in San Francisco. I just couldn't make it happen. I had my dad over from the UK. I've just been off the road, my friend.
You could have taken him with.
Oh, my dad's got absolutely zero interest in cars. He's like super excited that he owned a beaten up, God, what was it? An estate Vauxhall Astra with rust on it for like 20 years. He was like, that thing nice. Going for good 20 work, years. Dad. It was awesome. Bought it for a grand, you know. He couldn't give a shit. But no, I've seen the photos coming from it. It looked amazing. And I wish I could have gone there. And I'm now getting the emails about all the merchandise that's still available. And I'm thinking, I could do it with the t-shirt. Pretend I went.
Merch that's still available. I was on the Luft site today. There is like nothing available. I mean, it's ridiculous because for me to buy Luft merch, which I have done, as you well know, the postage shirt costs are exorbitant. But you know, I heard Chris Clewell talking about it on the Overcrest podcast, and he was saying it's the best one he's been to in a long time. He said just amazing, and actually said that day two, the new day, the air and water day, he said was actually almost, well, he said better than Luft itself, better than day one.
No which way.
Is a big,
wow. Yeah.
Well, because think about this, right? Like the Luftgekühlt as an event, you know, takes this 9/11 story, but only up to a point, only up to the mid-90s, and then it just stops. Whereas so much has happened in the world of 911s and Porsche in general outside of that period, and the transaxle cars, all these other things. So, oh man, I Do you know what? When it was in Indianapolis, I didn't have a huge amount of FOMO. Even at the Port of LA, when was that? Last year, I guess. Last year, again, yeah, last year, I didn't have massive FOMO, but this year, yeah, the FOMO is real. It is real.
Yeah, yeah. Same here. And I went to the one in Indianapolis and was absolutely blown away. Thought it was incredible. Didn't mind missing last year too much, but yeah, seeing the photos coming out of this year's event, pretty gutted. But that, you know, that kind of just makes me even more excited about the events that I am attending, you know, later on this year. And Rennsport Reunion, my friend, are you coming to that? Are you going to figure that out?
I don't think so. I really want to. Do you know how many people have asked me if I'm coming? Like, I feel like it's going to be this, I hate the phrase content creator, but I feel like it's just going to be this Porsche content creator mecca where everybody, and we all kind of know each other. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We sort of cross paths. I feel like it's going to be, everyone's going to be there except me. Mm-hmm. Except me, which is sad. It's really sad.
We need to change that. If anybody would like to donate a few dollars to the Andy Gaunt's Travel to America for the event,
my GoFundMe page.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more the time. You know, like I figure between Alpine Range Rally and another Tasmania trip in November. Yeah, you know what? Taking another trip without the family, like three in a year, is just, it's hard to justify.
It's so doable. It's easy to justify. It's so doable.
You're right. I'm looking at it all wrong.
You are, absolutely. Once again, your priorities are screwed.
I'd be a better husband and a better father if I attended this. Because I feel like it would just help me defrag, help me kind of reset, and motivate me to improve my life and my parenting and my husbandry even more.
So that's Luff 9. Did you hear a rumor? Have you heard any rumors from Porsche?
I've heard a few rumors. Yeah, a few Porsche rumors. Now, you know, look, not to quote other podcasts, but let's quote another podcast. Spike Ferriston's been certainly talking up rumors of late. And on his Instagram just yesterday, you'll have seen basically a list of all of the Porsche releases between now and 2028, I think. It's mad. It's pretty full on. But there's a couple that I think are worth discussing. The first is this announcement of something coming on June the 8th, which I think most people now accept is the 911 ST. I'm really interested to see this car because the ST for me is one of the, you know, if you had a huge amount of money, an ST or some kind of ST replica, I just think is infinitely cool. So I love the idea that Porsche are going to have a crack at creating a new one.
So what does that mean?
Well, the word on the street is, because the ST was like a track car, a rally car, it did everything. Johnny Lieberman from Road and Track and also Spike's Car Radio, his mail is that the 911 ST is going to be a manual de-winged version of the GT3 RS.
Oh, holy, holy God.
So now that's...
And naturally aspirated.
Naturally aspirated, 520 horsepower, manual, no wing. So when you're going around a corner at speed, why would you want downforce? could be really, really interesting. I mean, look, either way, it's going to be one of those cars that is as rare as rocking horse shit. No one will get one. but I think I love the fact that they're doing it. I know Porsche creates these cars and no one can get an allocation. No one who deserves one ever seems to get one. But I love that they keep doing it. I think that's just, it's just cool. It just keeps you interested. And yeah, I think
it does, doesn't it?
It's rad. It does. It does.
Yeah. You see these kind of announcements, you're like, I'm never going to sit in that car. I might see one at Cars and Coffee one day.
Yeah.
But I'm still equally excited that it's just out there in the world.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's virtually irrelevant. It may as well be science fiction as far as I'm concerned. And yet I love it. I love it. The other thing that was spoken about is the reveal of the 992.2. Now, again, according to Johnny Lieberman of Motor Trend, the way the range is going to work is that the standard Carrera will be standard internal combustion engine. However, the Carrera S, the GTS, and the turbo variants are all going to be hybrid.
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe it.
I feel like he's probably, you know, when you write for Road and Track, I feel like you've probably got the inside word on this sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I can't see it. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. And the fact that they're still offering the base Carrera, you know, as a traditional 911, if you will, you know, I wouldn't be upset by that at all. I think I'd welcome it, but I just can't see it. Maybe it's because I've been looking at sort of, you know, the last two or three generations of various Porsche vehicles and looking at what they've done with the hybrid, and the hybrid has been an option within the generation, within the range. You know, it's the Cayenne hybrid, it's the Panamera hybrid. And so that's kind of what I'm expecting for the 911. But I suppose it wouldn't be, you know, completely out of the blue for Porsche to just go completely balls out and do something like that. But I don't know what though?
It's a really interesting point you make, because you're right. They do tend to, you know, they've been leading us towards this softly, softly. And so, yes, there is a turbo hybrid version of the Cayenne, like you say, so that you have that option, but then you still have the option of, you know, the kind of engines we've come to know and love. It does feel, though, to me as though we're potentially at some kind of tipping point with Porsche. You know, the fact that the current generation Cayman and Boxster are the last to not be fully EV does suggest there is a genuine shift coming in the brand, and a genuine shift coming in the way that they are going to power their vehicles. So, with that as the context for this, it does make me think there's some credibility in the idea of them offering those, you know, I guess turbo cars now as a hybrid only. And I mean the position of the battery, etc. I know that space has been available even from this first 992 generation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's see, huh?
Oh man, that's just so interesting. And now, of course, I'm going to be thinking about this day and night until it actually gets announced. it's exciting, but you know, so is the idea of a hybrid 911 for fuel efficiency, or is it for power? Because the hybrid, let's say the regular cars, the Cayenne, etc., the Panamera, presumably that hybrid version has better gas mileage and so it's for efficiency. But the the concept of the 918 Spider with those two batteries and the hybrid engine, I'm pretty sure that wasn't for fuel efficiency.
No.
That was, how can we turn this already fast car into a lightning fast car? Do you think Porsche are going to try and bring both of those?
You'd have to expect so,
into
right?
the car.
I feel as though I'd be really surprised if they didn't, because let's say the performance was equal to the performance of the non-hybrid variant, then you'd sort of say, well, that's a miss, right? Like a Carrera S should always be quicker than a Carrera. So where's that extra horsepower going to come from? Presumably partly from the hybrid technology, you know, providing that extra shove. I mean, This is all obviously hearsay, so we don't know. But I would assume it will be about fuel economy, and it has to deliver a performance benefit. It has to. Otherwise, the enthusiasts who are going to be, you know, potentially a little bit anxious about this development would have reason to be anxious. So Porsche needs to be able to say, hey, do you know what? We know you guys love the internal combustion engine. We've kept it. But also, when you buy the hybrid, you get this much more horsepower. It's got to be on the agenda.
Yeah. You know what? I'm like so excited. I've almost got tears in my eyes. Like, just imagine a 911 with 600 horses that gets you 30 miles a gallon. Or 35.
More.
I mean, it's Christmas all in one.
So let me ask you this, though, because, you know, we were just talking about the ST, right? And we're both saying, oh, we'll never sit in one, let alone drive one, let alone own one.
Yeah.
Why is it that we hang on these announcements so much, whether it's the ST, whether it's the next generation of 992, you know, a car that perhaps we might own 15 years after it's released? Why do we all salivate over this so much?
Oh, dude, it's easy. It's because we've got kids and we're married. I guarantee you, the single girls and guys out there that are getting laid and going out partying and waking up late with a hangover are like, there's what? A 911 ST? Talk to me after I've had my Bloody Mary. But it's the married folks with kids that don't want to watch another episode of Peppa Pig. They're like, just tell me something new. Tell me something exciting. Porsche going to the moon. Come on. We're going to colonize Mars.
Well, on that, the other rumor is that there is a
Porsche
hypercar.
Going to the moon?
No, there's a hypercar.
Oh. What on earth is a Porsche hypercar? I mean,
well, then the 918 was their last hypercar, and prior to that, you had the Carrera GT. So there tends to be a 10-ish year cycle, right? And according to these rumors, 2016 we will see some manner of Porsche hypercar.
2026, yeah.
Oh yeah, 2026. Sorry, did I say 2016?
Yeah.
I'm living in the past, man.
You did.
Yeah. So that'll be really interesting. Gosh, no. I mean, who knows what that's going to be? Who knows what that's
going to
be?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, though, all of this stuff just, you're right, it gets me so excited. I mean, let's just wind back a few. So the 992.2, there's all of the news and all of the rumors about hybrid power, but you know, let's talk about the facelift. Let's talk about, literally, maybe we don't have to, but there are other things coming with the second generation 992 that are exciting for the Porsche enthusiasts. And I've seen, you know, the concepts of what the front end is going to look like, and there have been some spy photos. Mm. I don't know if they've actually done the official reveal of all of the trim updates. But I think they're going to. I think they're going to nail it. I think they're going to really nail it. This is what I get really excited about, not just about the mechanical, you know, changes, the technological changes, but how can they continue to improve on that silhouette? It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, they always seem to do it so well that the second generation or sub generation, I guess, they always just seem to tweak the styling in such a way that it just elevates it. You know, when you look at the 991, and we've spoken about this before, I remember when the 991 was released, I thought, this looks fantastic. But the rear end, I just loved it. I love the tail lights. I just thought it looked fantastic. But then when the second generation came out, oh my goodness, it's next level. If you look at a 991.1 GT3, looks good, right? Yeah. But then when the Dot 2 came out, that front end with the angled intakes, man, that looks so good. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that going, oh man, and I'm now thinking about all the dream cars that I want, of course, but the 991.2 GT3 and the Touring, Give me one of those. I'll be set the still, rest of my life. Just
that is still, to me, 901.2 GT3 Touring is still the car. If you said you could only have one, but it can be whatever you like, so just choose one tomorrow and you can spend as much as you want, 991.2 GT3 Touring, done. Move on. Next.
With or without the deviated red interior?
Well, it would depend on the color of the exterior, of course. You know, because would I go carmine red, crayon?
Oh.
Sapphire blue.
So tell me about the recent rally. I'm like itching to get out on the road. I've got a couple of trips coming up, like a month away, 2 months away, 6 months away, but I'm dying to get out on the road. And there you are, bozzing around with your friends. How was that?
Well, I'll start by saying this. If you are planning any sort of event that needs to be held outdoors, I'm thinking a wedding perhaps, some sort of picnic, anything like that, what I would encourage you to do is DM me via Instagram, ask me when the next Alpine Range Rally is, and then I would suggest you choose the weekend either immediately prior or immediately following, because they are always weekends of glorious weather, whereas Alpine Range Rally is always horrendous weather, and this one was no exception. So
I was going to ask, because after hearing about all of the others, it always starts with,
always,
well, it was great, but, and then rain.
Always.
Again?
Always. Yeah, again. So, well, okay, so to be fair, so day one, Friday, we had sunshine, glorious sunshine all day, which is, you know, was fantastic. And to be honest, I was saying that if I make it to lunchtime on Friday and my car still hasn't been rained on, from then on, everything else is gravy. I'm pretty happy. Mm-hmm. So we set off in the morning. And let me just say, the whole reason we left this until May, when weather was likely going to be pretty average, was because my good friend Rocco is waiting on a car that he ordered from Porsche back in 2021. We booked the trip for May to absolutely guarantee that the car would be here in time for that trip. The car was still floating around off the east coast of Australia when we did this rally.
Fucking hell, Rocco.
That's 100%. So he's off the next one. just kidding, Rocco. I love you, mate. So anyway, we had the first day, amazing. But also because of the time of year, one thing that did happen was we ran out of light. Because it's not daylight savings anymore, and at the end of the day, we still had a little bit of a ways to go, and the sun went down and it was dark. So the last section of twisties, we've never had this in a rally before. We did the last 20 minutes of twisties in the dark, and I'm not really a big fan of doing that kind of driving at night, if I'm honest. We have so much wildlife here, kangaroos and wallabies and wombats and echidna, and they all come out at night. That, you know, they're all these bloody mammals that want to go out on the road in the middle of the night, right? So I was a little bit anxious about it, but it was brilliant. It was so good. And I was towards the front, and I let my buddy Gerard get in front of me a little bit. I let him get some space so that I could turn the GT4's high beams on. The high beams on the GT4, unbelievable. Dude, it's like daylight. Just lights up
all
the
those
place.
Poor nocturnal kangaroos.
Yeah. Blinded. Just all looking there wide-eyed. And apparently to anyone who was at the back of the pack, you know, you could just see this line of tail lights. It was just brilliant. So anyway, we got into town that night. That was really good. Day one, huge success. Day two, we woke up and of course it's raining. And not only that, we travel north. We basically travel from the coast up over the Alpine Ranges to a place called Bright on day two. What happened overnight was you can either drive over Mount Hotham or another mountain called Falls Creek. They are both ski resorts. And what happened overnight was they had snow. Both of them had snow.
No way.
Yeah. So we couldn't find out any details on how much snow they had. whether the roads were open or not. There was recommendations. There's a little town called Omeo, which is at the base of Mount Hotham. They, in town, they were recommending that if you were to drive up Mount Hotham, you take chains, which, as you can imagine, none of us had. My friend Dale and I paid a visit to the local police station, asked them if they had any information. They did not. So we were kind of stuck, and we genuinely started thinking about whether we'd be able to drive back down to where we'd stayed on the Friday night and get accommodation back in town and then drive home. So we decided, which was the worst plan B ever, but we decided there was one other option, which was to basically drive around the mountains. And there's a road that we've done a portion of previously, but we've never done all of it because it's really tight, really technical, and it goes for 100 kilometers. Oof. And, but you know what? We all just looked at each other and, well, we just said, you know what? We have no choice. The only way we can get to the destination for tonight is to go this long way. So we set off, and the first section of this road we've driven quite a few times. And we always get to this one turn off and then decide that the road is just so technical, it's too hard work. We've done 25 kilometers of it. The idea of doing another 75 is just too much. So we'd never driven past this turn off, but we had no choice this time. Well, as soon as you got past the turn off, the road opened up. And it became, I think, the best road I've ever driven in this state.
No way.
James, it was unbelievable. Just it climbed. It didn't get into the snow. I was looking at the temperature gauge on the car, on the dash. It was saying, I think the lowest we got to was 4 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. Sorry, everyone. But
it's still pretty low, but
yeah, well, I mean, zero is freezing, right? So we were certainly a little bit cautious at that point, and it's bucketing rain the whole time, just bucketing. But the road was just incredible. Nobody out there, no cars, and just we had this road to ourselves for 100 kilometers. And then when it finally finished, and it had everything, it had tight, twisty alpine, it had flowing riverside roads. It just, the way the terrain changed, the way the scenery changed, it just got more and more epic as we went. And then we finish up in a little town called Mitter, where there was a beautiful little pub with amazing food, and everyone was just absolutely buzzing. Just buzzing.
Yeah.
So we had lunch, we left there, and then again we're on these roads that were just, we're out of the alpine area at that point, but just these beautiful open sweeper kind of roads. And we just got this, you know, when you're in a group and you just get this rhythm going where you're just bombing along the road, you're not touching the brakes, you're probably going faster than our friends.
The kangaroos.
You're going faster than the kangaroos, let's say. But you just get into this zone. Well, that was what it was like all the way to our Saturday night stop. It was, it's one of the best days of driving I've ever, ever had. Just incredible.
That's so cool. And by accident, just because of the weather.
By accident, the best plan C ever. Sunday, we woke up. I was coming down with some kind of virus, to be honest. I was pretty unwell. And so we left in the morning. I'd put some new roads in into the route this time, which were really, really good. We stumbled onto this amazing car show in this tiny little town, an old mining town. And there's this car show going on there with all these like old muscle cars and British cars, all sorts of fun stuff, which was cool. Then when we stopped for our kind of morning coffee about 11 o'clock, I grabbed my coffee takeaway and I said, guys, I've got to go. I was really struggling. So the last bit of twisties, which is a great road called Mansfield Whitfield Road, I drove that on my own and I basically had the road to myself. And I just had some tablets to help with my sinuses and stuff. And so I was feeling quite buzzy and happy and drove this road. It was a brilliant way to finish. And then after that, it was sort of 2-hour slog home, but it just reestablished for me what an awesome, awesome event Alpine Range Rally is. Just brilliant. And such, honestly, man, such a good group of dudes. So many laughs. And I think that's the really great thing. We had brilliant roads, obviously. The weather was rubbish. But, you know, even on the Saturday, right, when we're like, we've got no choice. We have to go this way. No one was coming over to Rocco or me and saying, well, how come you guys didn't plan this already? Or how come you didn't run it earlier in the year when we wouldn't have snow? You know, no one said that. Everyone just said, all right, yeah, fuck it. Let's go. It's going to be an adventure. Everyone just embraced it. And it was just great.
That's
so
the best.
It is. So huge hats off to the whole group, except for you, Trev. You know what you did.
I'm not even going to ask.
I've just been so
Trev
desperate
turn
to
up
throw
in a non-Porsche car.
No, I've been so desperate to throw him under the bus. No, Trev's all right. I'm just messing with
him. So you were in the GT4? What about Little GT4. Green? How's Little Green? I worry that Little Green's just sitting around, rusting away, not getting any love.
Now, Little Green's getting a lot of love. Over the Easter break, I went away with my family, and Kath and my daughter Indy we went to a place called Phillip Island. They drove to that destination on, I can't remember what day it was, maybe the Monday, and then Ryder, my son and I, we drove down there on the Tuesday and we took Little Green, and it was brilliant.
Nice.
However, driving back, we took a detour and drove some twisties on the way back, which was really, really good. But the car has had some problems, some understeering problems, which we've been trying to alleviate with alignment, all sorts of stuff. But it's gotten quite bad. And it only understeers when I'm turning right. Turning left.
Oh, really?
It's amazing. Turning right. Hmm. It's like Zoolander, right? You can't turn right the other way. So it's actually gotten to the point where I actually had to slow down because it felt unsafe. So I got home, took my left front wheel off the car, KWV3 leaking. So I don't know quite how catastrophic that is in terms of how much it affects the performance of the shock, but I would assume if it's not sealed, it means the compression damping is not working actively. Yeah. It means the rebound damping is not working actively, which means you're really at the mercy of the spring rate. The spring's kind of doing all the work, right? And that's uncontrolled suspension. So here's the great thing. KWV3s, in North America at least, have a lifetime unlimited kilometer warranty.
Yay.
In Australia, they have a 2-year warranty. And I've had them 3.5.
Oh, mate. why would that be?
Because we're Australia. She'll be right, mate.
She'll be all right, mate.
Do you know,
I've never encountered that actually, like warranty variances across.
Same. I looked it up online and I thought, amazing, lifetime warranty, perfect. And then dug a little deeper and sure enough, it's a bit different here. And the irony is when I bought them, I could have bought them overseas for a lot cheaper. I could have sourced them in the UK for a lot cheaper than I could get them here in Australia. But I had read a few things about KWV3s having issues with leaks. And I thought, no, do you know what? I'll pay more so that I have the protection of the warranty should this ever occur to me. And what do you know? I'm outside of warranty. So the car has the car is now at Nine Auto, my good friends, and they have removed both front shocks, which have then needed to be sent to Sydney. There is only one place in Australia that is approved to do the repairs and servicing. Mm. So they'll be there for however long it takes to service them. Apparently all the parts and stuff they have, so hopefully not too long.
Okay.
And then they'll be reinstalled and happy days. But honestly, I'm missing Little Green. I'm taking Little Green to Tasmania this year. Little Green's coming to Tassie.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So the shocks, you don't need to replace them and pay full price. You're gonna.
I don't think so. I think
pay a fair whack, but they're gonna get repaired.
From what I understand, it's not horrific. It's basically just a service and rebuild, which, yeah, I don't think is that bad. So it's sort of in the hundreds of dollars, plus obviously courier fees to send them to Sydney, plus labor for Nine Auto to remove them, reinstall them, realign the wheels.
Sure.
And then of course the other thing is because that shock hasn't been working properly, the inside shoulder of that left front tire is just
destroyed.
Yeah. And trying to get Michelin Pilot Sport 4S's is difficult at the best of times. And from what I understand, from what I've been told from a few sources, literally no 225 4018 PS4S's in the country.
Oh, dude, you got to move. Another reason why Australia sucks.
It's true. So anyway, so tell me about you. What's the updates with Bluey, the Cayenne? What's happening? What's going on?
You know, so I've had a pretty quiet start to the year. Just in the past month, I've been sort of like gearing up. I've been getting out driving a lot. I've been in the garage. I've been working on a bunch of cars for friends. It's been pretty cool. I've got like three new videos that are sort of all in the pipeline.
Nice.
And one of the reasons I've not been publishing any videos yet this year is because I moved away from Adobe Premiere and I've gone to Final Cut Pro. And
why?
Yeah, exactly. Why? Why did I do that? Because I thought, you know, I'd give Final Cut Pro a go.
I thought you did it all in iMovie.
Screw you, man. anyway, Final Cut Pro, I'm having a few issues. It's a different UI, and I really should go back to Adobe. But I'm like halfway through editing these videos, so like I've got to just do it now. I used to edit on Final Cut, though.
It's not horrific.
It's not terrible, but it's editing, right? Yeah, it's just, you know, all of the shortcuts are in different places.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's all of that good stuff. But no, Bluey's doing really well. In fact, Bluey's at a body shop this week. I'm getting the front bumper resprayed. I had a couple of issues with rock chips. And I want to get it PPF'd. And also, I'm getting rid of the two drill holes and the mount points for the license plate. I'm, you know, instead of just being a little bit of an outlaw and not having a front license plate on my car, because I don't like how they look on the 911s, I'm actually just getting rid of the mount holes completely.
So it's completely clean. That is so cool.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
So I should be getting Bluey back in a week or two. And then pretty shortly after that, Chris and I and a bunch of local friends are driving to Mount Rushmore and the Black Hills, Devil's Tower, and that's going to be great. Loads of epic kind of mountain and prairie driving there, loads of twisty turnies. So I'm basically just trying to get Bluey ready for that, you know.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Tell me this, because obviously we see footage, photos, Instagram, the whole box and dice of 911s in the US with no front plate. What's the deal? How does that work? I assume it's not legal, but clearly it's not that much of a risk to run no plate because everyone seems to do it.
You know, so a couple of things. It's illegal in some states and it's legal in others. So
really?
Yeah, I mean, just the nature of the federated government here in the US, like the federal government has very little control nationally, you know, or at least, you know, in each of the different local levels. So each state basically has their own law. So there are probably a bunch of cars in every state that are driving from out of state that don't have license plates on the front. So if a cop sees you without a plate on the front, their first instinct isn't, oh, there's a violator. It's, you know, it's probably, well, if I get a chance to check the rear and see that it's not an in-state car, then I'll probably do something about it. So they're not immediately incentivized to look for that and do anything. Plus, even if they were to pull you over, you'd probably likely get a warning. I think technically, and I have actually been charged once. I got a citation once when I had my first 996. I just happened to go hooning by a Minnesota state trooper. I was like, hey, man. And he just went, boo, pulled me straight over. It's like a $150 citation or whatever. But it's right. it's no points on your license. So There are quite a few people that that just, you know, take the risk and just refuse to put them on certain cars. And I've been doing it. I'm going to say it now and I'm going to get caught. But like for the last 3 years, I've been running my 991. I'm a 996 without front plates. And I've never had an issue. And, you know, if once every 3 years, if I get pulled over and have to pay $150 for a citation, I don't really care, to be honest. They look so much better without the front plate.
Oh, it does. Do you know, the thing that goes a step further and is even cooler in my view is exactly what you're doing. I've seen there's a bunch of 964s I see on Instagram in LA where they've deleted the number plate recess from the front bumper. So just smooth. Mm-hmm. It is just, it looks so good, so clean, just so good. I would love to do that.
The other thing now is that because my 911's older than 20 years old, it's technically a classic car, and classic cars by law don't have to have a front license plate on. So there's also that. And you know, this place is so big and you're out of the cities. You hardly ever come across cops on the road. You know, just country is so damn big. I think your odds are, you know, they are in your favor for getting away with it. And not advocating to break the law, by the way, but it just looks so much better.
Oh, it does. And well, I mean, Bluey has become much more of a long-term sort of stalwart in your garage than we probably anticipated. I remember that, you know, that car was going to be sold. Yeah. It was not going to stick around, and yet it's serving you so well, seemingly.
I just, every time I go take it out for a drive, I just fall in love with it more. And, you know, having gone through so many of the different generations of 911, okay, older than water-cooled, it's a surprise to me that the 996 is the one that I'm like super excited about and just love driving. I love the 997. I love the 991, but there's just something about this car, this color, the work that's been done to it. The fact that, you know, I've been there as the engine's been replaced and the transmission's been replaced and, oh man, it's just so comfortable, and I've done the console delete, so the leg room, I have so much room in that car. Better than my truck, it's better than my Cayenne. Every time I get into it and I fire it up, I just love it. So I think I've been speaking with my friend Patrick, who financially went in on it with me originally.
That's right.
And you know, so so he's got skin in the game. And originally, you're right, the plan was to do it up, sell it off. And so now I've come to the realization that I'm probably going to keep it. I'm going to have to make Patrick whole. And then, you know, at some point in the future, if I do sell it, I'll be splitting any money I make from it with him.
Right.
That's it. You know, I think I'm going to keep it. And, because there's no, you know, car payment on it and it's like, it's mine.
Yeah.
If I want another 911 in the future, I'm just going to get a second 911. I've decided I've decided life's too short for any of that crap. So if I want a second 9/11, I'm going to get a second 9/11. That whole heart scenario that I went through last year and in December has kind of changed my perspective on a lot of things this year. And I'm sort of not taking anything for granted and sort of trying to capitalize on every opportunity that's in front of me. So, you know, let's go back to the fact that I'm going to Rennsport reunion this year, Andy, and you should too.
How did we get back there? I was just...
See what I did there? Did you see how I brought that back?
Well, yeah, but I was... Hold on. Because I'm
life's too short. I will see you in Laguna Seca.
Yeah, I get it. Life is definitely too short. I don't disagree with that. Nor do I disagree that the 996, it has this really unique appeal, I think, in the 911 world. And far out, every 996 owner has been saying for years, duh, we all knew. you've never met a 911 owner who talks about values more than a 996 owner. But
yeah.
They are such a sweet spot. And, you know, I laugh, you know, my friend Al, you know, he's got a Gen 1 996 Tiptronic. And, you know, that second day of Alpine Range Rally that I was talking about, he led everybody out that day. And all the fast guys in GT cars, all sorts of stuff. He was in his Tiptronic 996 and everyone was just afterwards just calling him the Flying Scotsman. Like no one could keep up with him. Because that car is just, he's not done anything crazy to it, but it is just dialed. And the turn in on it, the steering, I still think of all the 911s I've driven, I don't think I've driven a car with nicer steering than his 996. It is just,
wow.
It is so, so good. So I think they're such great cars. I've been looking at them myself thinking, I reckon I could do a 996.
I think you should. You know, so the other thing I was talking about was that I've been doing quite a bit of work on other people's cars recently. I've turned my my 996 has become the dealership loaner. So when friends, so I had a friend.
I'm not sure I agree with that strategy.
You know what though? It's so cool, and I it gives me a massive buzz to just see how blown away people are by driving my car. Is that weird?
No, 100%. Not at all.
I had a guy over the other day and I did an oil change in a 991. He took Bluey out for a drive for an hour, came back and was like, wow, I think I kind of want to look at a 996. That's awesome. What about this? I was doing a radio job for a guy the other day in my garage, putting in the Joy Auto Apple CarPlay unit. Same thing. He took the car out for a couple of hours. Another guy did a radar detector install. All of these people have come along basically and had Bluey for an hour or an hour or two out in the country roads, and they've just been blown away. So it's been pretty cool. You know, I've been working on different Porsches. I've had a good chat with people when they come back and talk about how much they like driving Bluey. It's like oddly satisfying. It's been really cool. But yeah, a lot of people are surprised by just the power, that it's more powerful than they expected. Yeah. The handling's better than they expected. It's more comfortable than they've expected. I guess it's a misunderstood 911, and it's coming back into its prime.
Oh, 100% agree. 100% agree. I think people have worked it out. I think the days of it being maligned and misunderstood are past. And yeah, I think people are working it out, which is great. It's great.
So the 996 is staying, and I think a 991.2 will be joining the family at some point later this year. I think so. That's the plan.
What a combination. And that 991.2, I mean, even the base Carrera, you know, you read about the way it performs compared with the first gen 991 and, you know, a base Carrera is similar to driving a 991.1 Carrera S.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Such good cars. So such good cars.
I'll be tuning that and, you know, hopefully getting it close to 500 horses, which is borderline turbo territory. It's going to be an exciting year, my friend. So let's move on to our corporate video segment of the podcast. What are we calling it again?
Porsche Global Community Vibes.
How are we going to cool that up? I mean, it's
we
not
don't
like
have to.
The video of the week.
That was
Porsche
lame
Global
as well.
Community Vibes with Andy Gaunt and James McGrath.
I don't give a shit. If you want to call it something different, offer something up. Otherwise,
all right,
I don't need you lobbing grenades from the sidelines. And you've almost ruined this for me because this is something I've wanted to say on the pod now for a long time. And I wanted to genuinely reach out with gratitude to somebody. And you've brought the tone of it down.
All right, I'm going
to
do...
This was supposed to be such a good thing.
Here we go. It's going to be great. I'm going to do the intro, and then you're going to go straight in and talk about the exciting things you were going to
All right, let's do it. Let's go.
New from Curb and Canyon, the Porsche Global Community Vibe segment. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
All right. Well, I am going to do it. So, look, the whole idea of this, sure, let's come up with a better name. But the whole idea of this, one of the things I think is so cool is that there is this true kind of global community when it comes to Porsche. And, you know, it's like you and me, dude. Like, we've literally never met. We are thousands of miles apart. We've never shaken hands, nothing. We do not know each other other than these little chats we have every so often.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's great, right? And it struck me recently. So a while ago, Porsche launched the Porsche brand store in Stuttgart. And I remember seeing some content around this on Instagram, and it looked super cool. It's not just full of the standard kind of Hugo Boss white, red, and black Porsche Motorsport jackets and umbrellas and all that sort of stuff. There's all sorts of cool collaborations, some really, really cool stuff. And I saw that Race Service, which is – they're a kind of automotive content creation business out of LA. They do all sorts of stuff. They make the videos for Lufkakult. They do the custom helmet designs for Daniel Ricciardo's Formula One helmets. They do all sorts of stuff. And I noticed they'd done a collaboration with the Porsche brand store and had some merch. One item of which was this really cool hat, this Porsche Motorsport hat. And I saw it and I just thought, that's got my name all over it. And I half jokingly shared that on Instagram on my story and said, hey, is anyone going to Stuttgart anytime soon? Well, a lovely lady named Rita messaged me and said, my husband Frank and I are going there. We'll get you the hat.
And
And I said, Rita, don't have to do that. That's just crazy. I wasn't really serious. Well, Rita and Frank went to the Porsche brand store in Stuttgart, got me the hat, traipsed around Europe, went to God knows how many different countries with this thing in their suitcase, protecting it so it didn't get squashed.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I drove to their place of business, which is not far from where I work, to collect this hat, and they had it for me. It was the most generous thing to do, the most... Do you know what I mean? Like, just somebody really going out of their way and doing something amazing. And I couldn't thank them enough. And so I want to pay tribute to them. And it was where I got the idea for this, because I just thought that just blew me away. And I'm just so grateful to them both.
That's awesome. I love stories like that. And it's not the first that I've heard. I mean, you're absolutely right. Everybody talks about how great this um, this Porsche community is, and it's absolutely true. So what a very nice story. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the hat? I'm not wearing it, Andy.
I'm not wearing it right now because look at the hair.
The hair's perfect. Right? We don't want to mess the hair up.
No.
So speaking of segments, the video of the week. Hit us, Andy.
Have you watched this?
Hit us, Andy.
All right. Well, look, I was in the lead up to Alpine Range Rally. I must confess that I was consuming a lot of video content that was based around rallies and road trips and those sorts of drives. And this video comes from Flat Six High Five. You would have seen the YouTube and Instagram account of the same name, and it's from their Sick Alps tour in 2020. I love that name, Sick Alps. I just think that's really, yeah, really cool. And it's just a great video. It's not that long, but I just love the footage. I love the mix of cars, the weather, the roads. I mean, the roads far out. To drive in Europe, you just see this footage of, you know, all these mountain passes that they have over there.
Yeah.
And they just look so epic, and you just have so much visibility, seemingly. Just grass on either side of the roads and sheer cliffs, of course. But it just looks amazing, and I just love this. I love this video. I love that whole Flat Six High Five thing. I love their logo, all of it.
Yeah.
So we will we'll share it on Insta. But it's a kick-ass vid. Well worth a look.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And the drone shots, you know, I'm a big fan of the old drone photography. I mean, you can't really go too wrong with a location like that, but the shots that they've chosen and the way they've just laced it together, it's absolutely beautiful. How have they only got 156 subscribers?
I don't know.
That's ridiculous. You see a quality video like that? I mean,
100%. No, dude, I know. It always amazes me when I see content at that quality that's just not had the exposure. I don't know why. I don't know why. It's like Curves magazine. You know, some of their videos are just stunningly beautiful and yet not that many views. It always blows my mind.
Well, I've got a new subscriber now. I am subscriber 157, and I hope you have become subscriber too.
I am indeed. Well, my friend, I think that brings us to the end of another, hopefully, engaging, interesting, entertaining episode of Curb and Canyon.
Curb and Canyon. Yeah. And you know what? As much as I moan about having to get up early, this is actually quite a pleasant experience, Andy. So let's do this again, shall we?
Let's do it again sometime soon. It is good to see you, my friend.
You too, my friend. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in and sticking with us. It's nice to get comments. It's nice to get all the feedback we do episode to episode, even on my own Auto Amateur and Andy's Last Rasp channels. Thanks so much for your support. And we'll catch you in another podcast soon.
We'll see you guys on the next one.